You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a special Friday episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. Today's episode is sponsored by Action Heat, which makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Stay toasty warm during outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat apparel, and use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20% off your order. As we chat this Friday afternoon, the Rockets are getting ready a game tonight on national television against the San Antonio Spurs. Then they quickly follow that up on Saturday night with a home game, night two of a back-to-back against the Chicago Bulls. While part one is on the road, the good news is that there's not a lot of travel in between going back from San Antonio to Houston, so it's certainly not one of the more grueling back-to-backs. But for a Rockets team that enters struggling, losing four in a row, and has injuries up and down the roster at the moment, any back-to-back and three-game and four-night stretch coming off of Wednesday's 20-point defeat at home to Dallas, it doesn't help the situation. The good news is that three guys who have not been a part of this week's losses, and in the case of Nene, someone who hasn't even played yet this season, are now questionable, beginning with tonight's game. Chris Paul and Gerald Green with leg injuries, Nene with a calf strain. The bottom line is that a lot of the Rockets' current issues trace back to depth, and it's not just that they're the lowest scoring bench in the league. It's also how the lack of depth prompts them to extend their regulars in terms of minutes and usage, and that makes them more prone to defensive lapses, to turnovers, which we've seen a sudden uptick from James Harden, those types of things. So reinforcements are much needed. It's tricky bringing players back on a back-to-back because if they've been injured for a while and then you immediately insert them into two games in 24 hours, that can be tough, so who knows, maybe they play on the front end but not the back end, because on paper at least, the Spurs on the road are a more daunting opponent than the Bulls at home, but we'll have to wait and see. We're a few hours from getting answers on that front. This weekend, we'll have our usual recap, breaking down what happens on the floor, but in our show on Friday, we're going to take a much more macro-level view of how the Rockets got here and what the solutions are roster-wise to fix it. Because I think it's pretty clear by now that even though this current four-game losing streak, cutting off the five-game winning streak, has a lot to do with injuries, at the same time, when you're 9-11 at effectively the quarter pole of the NBA season, it's not just a few injuries that have happened over a span of a week. No, there are actual flaws in the construction of this roster, and maybe we didn't expect them to be this severe heading into the season, but unfortunately that's where we are when you're two games under 500 at the quarter point of the season. And as I see it, the far and away leading issue for the Rockets and the theme throughout the year has been the lack of depth, because we mentioned earlier it's the lowest scoring bench in the league, and of course the trickle-down effects from having to extend minutes in terms of your regulars, your starters. We've seen James Harden, P.J. Tucker, your mainstays, not be as efficient. But really, when you look at Wednesday's rotation against Dallas, you effectively had five starters and then three guys off the bench that were projected G-leaguers entering the season. Daniel House, who the Rockets just signed on Monday, Gary Clark, and Isaiah Hartenstein. That's not to say that the Rockets would pass up the opportunity to be more top-heavy. We know they went after Jimmy Butler. But the obvious problem for the Rockets now is not in terms of star power. They're actually 8-4 in games this year that James Harden and Chris Paul have both played, and that's after a year last year in which they were 42-3. So has there been some slippage in terms of the effectiveness of the big three, James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, and when they all play? Yes, but they're still a pretty good team when those guys are out there. The issue is that they don't have even replacement-level production on the bench, and that's what's on the forefront of Daryl Morey's mind, in my opinion, the GM of the Rockets, as he looks to improve this roster. The question so much isn't if he's going to do something, but it's when. And so in today's show, I'm going to break it down in terms of timing, what, first off, he can do now, what, secondly, he can do in a couple of weeks once December 15th gets here. That's an important date on the NBA calendar because that's when players who signed off-season contracts can be traded. And then finally in segment three, what might have to wait until February, that being the NBA's trade deadline, And then when the buyout market officially heats up with players being bought out on various usually losing situations around the league. We'll start, as stated, with what they can do now. And the good news, while of course they could easily let go of Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony, they may not, if you have injury replacements coming, then you may not have to do something quite as urgently. Yes, it's still a big deal, but think back to a week ago when they were on a 5-game winning streak and you had Chris Paul and Gerald Green playing. At that point, you feel pretty good because you've got Chris Paul starting, and that pushes Eric Gordon to the bench, and Gordon has had his best week of the year, so he finally seems to be rounding into form. And then you have Gerald Green and Gary Clark, and then especially if you have Nene coming into that backup center role, Mike D'Antoni said before Wednesday's game, pretty clearly I thought that he would usurp Isaiah Hartenstein as the team's backup center when he returns, and there are questions as far as how much a mid-30s Nene has left in the tank, but in the past couple of years, he has been a quality player. So anything for the Rockets at this point, in terms of reliable production, they're not going to turn away. But all that said, the reason why I think it's when rather than if changes are made, when you look at the current roster, all it takes is one or two injuries to send the entire thing into chaos. Right now, the past week, it's been Chris Paul and Gerald Green that have been out. Earlier this year, it was James Ennis and James Harden who had a pair of hamstring injuries. But even a couple of injuries all of a sudden puts the Rockets in a state where their bench is just largely unplayable. And when you look at the roster construction, it makes sense. Teams have 15 guaranteed roster spots. Well, of the Rockets' current 15, two of them are guys, Joe Chi and Isaiah Hartenstein, that are largely projects. Now, yes, Hartenstein's had a few good moments, particularly against the Warriors, but the reason I call them projects, I don't know if the Rockets are banking on either of those two players to truly be in their playoff rotation this year. I don't think they'd rule it out, but I think they would take it as a pleasant surprise. Largely, those guys are under contract based on what they're going to give you in future seasons. Beyond those two, you've got two players in Brandon Knight and Nene that have been injured and out indefinitely, that have yet to even play. Now, thankfully, it seems that Nene is about to return, but again, that's two of your roster spots. And then you've got two more roster spots in Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony, who clearly are not going to be players for you this season. Carmelo Anthony, they've already issued the statement that they're parting ways. Michael Carter-Williams is so bad in the eyes of Mike D'Antoni that he couldn't even get in the game until garbage time on Wednesday when the Rockets had no one to turn to off that bench when they were outscored 61-25 by the Mavs, and the Mavs had four guys off the bench that were plus 24 or better in the plus minus. So when you add up the injured guys, the projects, and the failed offseason signings, that being, for various reasons, Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony, that six of your 15 roster spots that have generally been spoken for but are not giving you any production, that's literally 40% of the roster that you are allocated and designed to have. So when you only have eight or nine players that you feel like you can truly trust, then all it takes is one or two injuries, and that's inevitable over the 82-game grind of an NBA season, and all of a sudden, things fall off the tracks very quickly, even if the Rockets are capable of going on a run like they did the 5-game winning streak, the 8-10 stretch prior to this current slide. The good news, of course, is that this is fixable. They've already issued a statement saying they plan to part with Carmelo Anthony, and I think they could easily do the same with Michael Carter-Williams. There's no risk with these minimum contracts. You can let them go, and there are quality street free agents. I mentioned Nick Young the other night. He's a guy who was a rotation player for the Warriors when they won the title last year. Corey Brewer has played for Mike D'Antoni before. So is Nick Young, for that matter. So they're familiar with the system, the scheme. Anthony Morrow is out there. Generally speaking, there are more veterans than ever that are available because you have fewer NBA teams that are going for it, given how lofty the Warriors have set the talent bar. So there are guys just like Gerald Green last year, who the Rockets picked up off the waiver wire, or off the street, I should say, in December. And Gerald was instrumental in helping them survive the various waves of injury that hit over the regular season. They can easily go back to that well again. The question, of course, is why haven't they yet? And there are two plausible reasons. One, as I pointed out on Wednesday's postgame show, is the tax ramifications. Because while it's easy for us to sit here and say, well, you know, you cut a guy and he's just making a minimum contract and then you bring in another minimum contract, well, while it's easy to create the roster spot. At the same time, you are paying for both those players, and the payments are multiplied several times based on the fact that the Rockets are a luxury tax team. And it's easy for me to say, when it's not my money, that the Rockets should do this for the betterment of the team. Whether Sheldon Fertitta is willing to eat that money, that remains to be seen. Now, we have seen some encouraging signs, such as bringing Jeff Pastelic out of retirement. That commanded quite a raise. So Tillman said all the right things about paying the luxury tax, but at some point he's got to do it with the current roster. That's one reason, potentially, that they have not made a move yet in terms of upgrading the Michael Carter-Williams or Carmelo Anthony roster spot for someone who, you know, there's no guarantees amongst the Nick Young, Corey Brewer type tier, but clearly there's at least some potential there, whereas it's pretty clear the Rockets have pulled the plug on MCW and Melo. The other potential reason, though, and this is unrelated to the tax, is the trade market, and this plays into December 15th. If those guys, Michael Carter-Williams or Carmelo Anthony, are traded, well, number one, I mean, it is still related to luxury tax in that if someone trades for them, then you're getting their salary off your books. You're not having to double dip. But beyond that, a trade for the type of upgrade that you want might require using that salary slot to acquire whatever new player you're getting. Whereas if you sign a street free agent, Nick Young, Corey Brewer, whoever it may be, you've effectively locked down that roster spot. They have to be there for 3 months. You can't just sign Nick Young and then include him in a deal the same way you could with Michael Carter-Williams. So it's not just the luxury tax impact that might be prohibiting the signing of an outside free agent now. It's the fact that if you do that for 3 months, and that goes all the way through this month and into February, you are largely keeping that roster spot locked. There's nothing you can do with it. Whereas with MCW and Melo, despite the fact that they're not giving you anything, you can, as of December 15th, because they were off-season signings, trade those guys, and then that gives you a lot more flexibility in terms of what Daryl Morey has, the tools at his disposal, to make the math work in various deals. So that's something that I do think should be noted. It's not just about the tax. There is a plausible non-tax reason why they could be delaying such a move as well, because at least with the in-house options, you do have the availability, the option of trading them once we get to that crucial December 15th date. The question is, can the Rockets wait that long now that they're already 9-11 and currently on a four-game losing streak entering Friday night's game in San Antonio? The question, it comes back to how long they can wait. We'll have more on that in a moment. But for now, I do want to briefly pause and tell you about our awesome sponsors over at Action Heat, because without their support, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do, the only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. And folks, as said earlier, Action Heat, you should know them because they make the world's best battery-heated clothing. That makes them especially popular this time of year with temperatures plunging, because they offer you heat on demand at literally the touch of a button. With a product line starting at just $39, Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat through the use of heating panels similar to those in a heated car seat. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees, and they're powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours per charge. Those batteries can also recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're using them. Action Heat offers both men's and women's products, with new styles and models just for this winter season. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with offerings like heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, even undergarments. It's perfect for anyone on your holiday shopping list, and really anyone that loves the outdoors or just hates being cold. The best part of it, of course, is that we've got a special deal for our listeners to save 20% off your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything they've got. That's actionheat.com/lockedon, or you can use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. So remember, let Action Heat keep you toasty warm during your outdoor activities this winter, and we thank them for sponsoring today's podcast. So jumping back into the program, we led off in segment one discussing the moves the Rockets can make now. Clearly there are six out of 15 that to this point of the year have largely been unoccupied or giving the Rockets just not nearly enough. And that's why the Rockets bench is where it is in terms of being the worst in the league in scoring and only continuing to get worse as they deal with injuries such as what's happened with Chris Paul and Gerald Green over the past week. The six roster spots in question, of course, Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony, two seemingly admitted failed signings in the offseason, two injury guys in Brandon Knight and Nene, and two projects in Jochi and Isaiah Hartenstein. And as far as what the Rockets could do now, yeah, you can easily let go of any of those guys, the obvious candidates being Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony on one-year minimum contracts, and bring in a street free agent, and there are accomplished guys. Nick Young, Corey Brewer, Anthony Morrow. There's more veterans available than ever, and just as Gerald Green was able to give you a boost off of the street last year, the same can be said for many of the options this season that are staying in shape. We saw a video from Mark Berman of Fox 26 here in Houston of Corey Brewer doing his workouts this week. He looks in shape. He's ready to go. The question is when the Rockets or anyone else is going to give him that call. And for all of their weaknesses, I think you can clearly make a case that they're better than guys in terms of giving you production on your bench that, for various reasons, are just not playing basketball. So, yes, there's a reason you could make a move today if you wanted. But the downside, besides the tax ramifications, which, while I know it sucks to hear that, because with Chris Paul at $40 million a year at age 33, you're kind of all in already. But number one, it's not our money. And secondly, again, it may not be just about the money. There's also the trade consideration, because if you sign a street free agent, you can't trade them for 3 months. Whereas with Michael Carter-Williams or Carmelo Anthony, for all their basketball negatives, as of December 15th, you can trade them anywhere. There are no restrictions. So they could fill out, in terms of salaries, many of the potential options that Daryl Morey will have at his disposal. The question, of course, is whether the Rockets can wait until December 15th, given their current dire straits, losing 4 in a row and 9 of 11. But the reason I think that they think they can is because of the parity in the Western Conference and really around the NBA. That's the underrated variable of this. Now, as a refresher, December 15th, the reason that's an important date, that's when off-season free agent signings can be traded. So, of course, that's when you can do something with the Michael Carter-Williams or Carmelo Anthony roster spots, as we were mentioning earlier. But generally speaking, around the league, it opens up a ton of new possibilities. It's kind of the kickoff to trading season every single year, because when that date hits, everyone around the league, not just you, can trade their entire roster. There are no restrictions, such as, you know, the three or four new players on a team, which that's the average I'm going with. But to start the year, those guys are off limits because they're off-season signings. Well, now everyone is available to be traded, and that's when you can start to get peak offers. There's no reason that say you wait and you might get a better offer. That's why you don't have that many trades in November in the NBA, Jimmy Butler notwithstanding, is because a lot of teams are going to say, well, you know, this offer is nice now, but what might I be able to get once December 15th gets here and everyone around the league has full flexibility with their rosters? Well, once December 15th gets here, then it's the kickoff to trade season, because now everything is theoretically on the table. Now, I know it may take until a deadline in February to exert maximum leverage. You have to wait and see on that. But generally speaking, December 15th is significant, because not just for the Rockets, but the entire NBA, that's when rosters are fully flexible and open to players being dealt. But to get back to the question of whether the Rockets can wait, the reason that they might not be able to, of course, is this current slide and the fact that, look, as I record this on Friday, November 30th, we're not even to December yet. We get there at midnight tonight, of course. But the point is, that's still 2 long weeks away, and the Rockets are in a stretch now where I think 4 of the next 5 are on the road. But the potential saving grace for the Rockets in all of this is how jam-packed the Western Conference is. Not even the Warriors are running off and hiding. Somehow, after the Warriors lost Thursday in Toronto, after everything the Rockets have been through, the Rockets are 3 games back, 11-8, in the loss column relative to Golden State. That is astounding to me, because as bad as it's been for the Rockets, and it's not to say that Golden State has been fully healthy, because they haven't. They've been dealing with their own injuries to Steph Curry and Draymond Green. But the point is that nothing is really off the table. And in terms of how quickly you can make up a deficit of that size, when the Rockets went on their 5-game winning streak from Sunday until last Wednesday, that was an 11-day stretch. The Rockets made up 5 games in the loss column. And, of course, that was exaggerated, the decline on the Warriors' side due to the Steph Curry and Draymond Green injuries. But the point is, all it took was a 5-game winning streak and a little bit of negative injury luck for Golden State, and the Rockets made up 5 games. They entered that 11-day stretch with 7 losses, the Warriors with 2, and then as they entered Thanksgiving, they both were at 7. So the downside of this current Western Conference, in which so many teams seem to be making strides, is that there aren't nearly as many easy games. We saw that Wednesday against a rapidly improving Dallas Mavs team. But the upside is that because of that, no one has been able to run away and hide, despite the fact the Rockets are 2 games under .500 at the quarter pole of the NBA season. Everything is out there. So that's why, in my opinion, the Rockets do want to make it until December 15th, is they look at the current standings and say, look, as bad as this is, we are not dead and buried, or even near dead and buried, because of how much parity there is up and down the Western Conference standings. That may buy them the time that they need. It's also, of course, based on the injury status of guys like Chris Paul, Gerald Green, and Nene, as mentioned earlier, all questionable beginning tonight in San Antonio. If those guys are able to come back, then all of a sudden I think you feel pretty good about the top nine in your rotation, your five starters, plus then Eric Gordon, Gerald Green, Gary Clark, and Nene off the bench. You feel pretty good about that, and Mike D'Antoni's not going to play a rotation deeper than nine guys anyway. Now, that's not to say that, well, you do that, and then miraculously everything is fixed. No, because of course, at some point, you're going to have more injuries, the same way you've already kind of had round one. As mentioned earlier, that was the first couple of weeks of the year when James Ennis and James Harden had their issues, and now you've got round two with what's going on now with Chris Paul and Gerald Green, and there's going to be more throughout the season. That's what happens to every team over 82 games. But if we're talking about just making it 2 weeks until December 15th, if those guys are able to play, between that and the cumulative strength and or parity of the Western Conference, those are reasons why the Rockets think that they might be able to hold out. And if they're able to do so, December 15th is when you might can get the best of both worlds, in that you can get the luxury tax benefits, of course, of having a player either claimed off the waiver wire, or more likely in the scenario we're discussing here, traded for, and then you'd have the roster spot open anyway, perhaps to sign a Nick Young or a Corey Brewer or whoever it may be. Or perhaps it's that you're trading for the upgrade. You're using Michael Carter-Williams and or Carmelo Anthony in a salary proposal to fill the math in terms of the collective bargaining agreement to bring in someone that is going to be an upgrade to your rotation. There's lots of possibilities, but that's the word I keep coming back to, possibilities. If you make it until December 15th, everything is on the table in terms of what Daryl Morey can do to bring in more depth to help this problem. The question is, if you can make it there, well, between the collective strength and parity of the Western Conference and the potential returns, if that's the case, we'll have to wait and see tonight, but Chris Paul, Gerald Green, Nene, that might be enough to let you make it 2 weeks. It's not a given, because when you lose four straight games and the last one just completely uncompetitive, the way the Rockets have, nothing is going to be easy for the time being. But we're not talking about finding a permanent solution here. We're talking about trying to make it until December 15th. And when you look at not just the Rockets' current situation, but the context around the league, there are reasons to think that they might be able to. Now, that's the good side of the parity that's going on around the Western Conference these days. There's also, unfortunately, a downside to that, which I'm going to tell you about in just a few moments on the other side. So, we wrapped up segment two talking about the significance of December 15th for the Rockets. As we look at this podcast, I'm breaking it down in terms of what you can do now, what you can do in weeks, that being December 15th, and what you can do in months, that being at the trade deadline. I mean, the buyout market heats up in February. And if you can make it 2 weeks until December 15th, it opens up a ton more options for Daryl Morey when it comes to filling out this roster. And who knows, you might end up signing a straight free agent at that point anyway, be it Nick Young, Corey Brewer, whatever it may be. It's just both for tax reasons and for trade flexibility reasons, it opens up significantly more doors in terms of what you do with Michael Carter-Williams, Carmelo Anthony, those roster spots, really 5 of 15 at the moment with Jochi and Isaiah Hartenstein, largely still projects, I believe. Brandon Knight still indefinitely out injured. And then the aforementioned MCW and Melo, that's 5 of your 15 roster spots, which for the time being are not going to give you reliable basketball production. It really is that simple. And so when you look at a Rockets team that seems to fall off a cliff anytime there's one or two injuries, well, that's why, because once your rotation gets down to 6 or 7, they don't have an in-house option, really, that they can trust. And the reason the Rockets might can make it until December 15th is because of the collective parity of the Western Conference, the fact that even the Warriors have not been able to run off and hide from the Rockets in their struggles. The Rockets are only 3 games back in the loss column of Golden State, despite everything that's going on and their current 4-game losing streak. And the upside is that, yeah, it buys you a little bit more time if you're the Rockets to get to December 15th. The downside to that dynamic is that it's not just keeping the Rockets afloat, it's keeping nearly everyone afloat, that parity, and thus because of that, it might take until longer in the season, getting into January or February, before there are sellers really committed around the league in terms of giving their parts to contenders. Because at this point, there are so many teams, much more than usual, entering December that can see a path at least to playoff contention. Right now in the Western Conference, the only team that's out of the mix is the Phoenix Suns at 4-17. And even in the East, which the East isn't quite as, I would say, parity ravaged as the West, there are more tiers there, but there are only three teams, the Cavaliers, the Hawks, and the Bulls, that are double digits under 500. And the Cavaliers have already sold off Kyle Korver, although I know Korver was traded to the Jazz. I never really saw Korver as that great of a fit for the Rockets because of, at 37 years old, his liabilities as a switching defender. I know he's a shooter, so I'm not going to say that the Rockets couldn't have used him at all. I would have been open to it for the right price. But in terms of giving up two future second-round picks plus Alec Burks, quality young player, I don't know that given Korver's age and defensive issues that I would have gone to that length the same way the Jazz did. Also a desperate team in the Western Conference, two games under 500, the same way the Rockets are. While Korver's a quality player, I don't know that I would go there if I were the Rockets, so I don't have too much regret in terms of Daryl Morey not striking that deal, the one that the Jazz did on Wednesday. But to get back to the main point, which is the timeline of roster changes for the Rockets, I let off saying, is it days, is it weeks, is it months? For anything significant, it might take months until closer to the February trade deadline, because with all this parity, there are fewer sellers than ever before. For example, we went into the season saying Dallas with Wes Matthews, that might be a trade candidate and or a buyout guy once you get to January or February. Well, right now, the Dallas Mavs are inside the playoff picture for the Western Conference. They're above 500 at 19 games, nearly a quarter pole for them as well. That's just one example, of course, but generally speaking, the point is that the same factors that are keeping the Rockets afloat to where they're not desperate that they have to do something right now are also keeping many other teams afloat to where they're not as desperately incentivized to make a sudden change as you would normally think many teams would by the early part, but certainly the middle part of December on the NBA calendar. Even Minnesota, who a lot of us wrote off for dead after the Jimmy Butler trade, now all of a sudden they've won four straight games, 7 out of 10, and they're 11-11, and they're knocking on the door of the playoff picture. Everyone is squarely in the mix based on the extreme levels of parity. The other factor that also works against the Rockets with this is that Brandon Knight still doesn't have any immediate timetable for his return to the court. There is a report out this morning from Shams Charania of The Athletic that the Rockets are sending Brandon Knight out on an assignment with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. I wouldn't get too carried away with that, though. Remember, with Brandon Knight, this is a guy who, it's not just the infection in his surgically repaired knee that he's dealing with now, it's the fact that he also didn't play last year at all, coming off the ACL surgery. So it's basically been two seasons since he's played NBA basketball, so I don't know that he's that close to returning to the court until we get a timetable from Mike D'Antoni. I think it's more, now that he's physically cleared, it's a matter of putting him on the basketball floor in real competition and starting to get a gauge on exactly where he's at after this extended layoff. I've said before, a big part of the reason the Rockets did the Ryan Anderson trade, it's not really that they were banking on Brandon Knight coming off an ACL injury and with known defensive issues to be a rotation player for them. The idea is that a 26-year-old Brandon Knight making $15 million a year is more palatable as a trade candidate to get the potential 3-and-D help you might need than Ryan Anderson at $30 million, or at 30 years old and $20 million a year. Smaller contract, more youth, more upside. Well, part of that calculation, is, especially the upside part of that, is based on Brandon Knight actually being able to play basketball. So between Knight's medical situation and parity, that probably pushes back the timeline, in my opinion, for a deal materializing until January or even up until early February and the trade deadline. The other thing that the Rockets have at their disposal, of course, is the mid-level exception, which they largely did not use this summer. They used a small chunk to give a three-year deal to Isaiah Hartenstein, but generally they have most of the taxpayer MLE available, and that's more than most teams have during the season. Most just have the minimum to offer to guys who get bought out. And the Rockets, we know there's not a finished product. We've heard Daryl Morey say, even before the season got off to this underwhelming 9-11 start, that they're looking to have the best version of the roster by April 15th, that it's not about who they are even during the season. We know they lost Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute in the offseason, and they're interested in replacing some of that level of production, potentially via trades or by the buyout market, which is what they're presumably saving the mid-level exception 4. Effectively, the Rockets decided in early July that they thought they'd get more bang for their buck holding that mid-level exception and rolling it into the season than they could using it on whoever was available for that price in early July. And of course, the most frequent buyout target discussed on Rockets Twitter is Trevor Ariza, who plays for the aforementioned 4-17 Phoenix Suns. They already bought out Tyson Chandler, and if Ariza got bought out, would the Rockets be after him? Yes, absolutely. I think they'd love to have him back at a cheaper rate. But there are going to be other options as well, and generally speaking, with all of them, the Rockets are going to have a leg up because they have more money to spend than other contenders, in addition to most likely a pretty obvious role, given the depth issues that the Rockets have at the current moment. But the same parity issues that make it less likely for, say, Dallas to trade a Wes Matthews, that's the example I used earlier, because now Dallas appears to be ahead of schedule and is actually competing for a lower-tier playoff spot in the Western Conference, those same issues are also going to make it less likely that they buy out that player, or at the very least, they're going to delay the potential buyout, because players only get bought out generally as a favor once it's accepted that their current team is largely out of the playoff mix. It's a favor to the player and his influential agent, basically saying, hey, we know it's not going to happen here for this season, so I'm going to give you a shot to go on to a place where you can contend. Well, the same parity factors that are diminishing the amount of sellers around the NBA at the moment may also push back the timeline for when the wave of buyout candidates that we all expect to materialize, when those guys come available. I do think eventually there's going to be separation in the standings, certainly by the end of February deadline for players to be bought out to be eligible for a playoff roster on their new team, but I don't think it's going to happen in December or January. There might be a few exceptions, maybe even Phoenix, who knows? That's the one team in the West that seems out of it. But other than that type of situation, the vast majority are going to be delayed. So as far as the bottom line for Daryl Morey and the Rockets, it's kind of a two-way street. The upside is that the parity of the league, it gives them some more flexibility than you might think, given how bad the current results on the floor are. But the flip side is that while it gives them flexibility, it also gives the rest of the league flexibility as well. And so it may take longer than we would normally think for Daryl Morey to identify potential sellers around the league to buy the rotation pieces from that he needs for this current team. So flexibility is there. The question is whether the market is going to materialize as quickly as the Rockets want and or need it. And the best I can tell you at this point, stay tuned. Anyway, that's enough of a high-level discussion for one day because, well, we're just a few hours away from actual basketball to discuss when the Rockets resume play Friday night, nationally televised game on ESPN against the state rival San Antonio Spurs. And that this weekend, also the Saturday back-to-back, the back half of it, that is, home against Chicago, that is when we'll get back to our micro-level analysis of the Rockets' game-by-game production on the floor and hopefully snapping this current four-game losing streak. Whatever happens, though, of course, we'll have you covered right here at Locked On Rockets because we are your home for daily podcast commentary on Houston Rockets basketball. And if you want more content before our next episode, the best place to get it, of course, is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. We've also got, though, a Facebook account, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com, an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All those ways that you can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, or inquire about how to become a potential sponsor of this rapidly growing program, just as our friends at Action Heat were today. Remember, stay toasty warm during your outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat's battery-heated clothing line and use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Supporting our sponsor is one way that you can help us stay in business here at Locked On Rockets. Another way that you can help the business is by subscribing to us, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, TuneIn. The odds are wherever you listen to your podcast, you can find us because we're part of a great network of shows at the Locked On Podcast Network, local experts across the NBA, but also the NFL, Major League Baseball, college sports. So if you subscribe to us, that's how you'll get episodes right when they come out. And if you would be kind enough to leave a 5-star review, that's how we can look attractive to potential sponsors just like Action Heat today and keep the business model working here at Locked On Rockets as the most regular podcast covering this basketball team. The same, of course, goes for Locked On Texans, our sister show hosted by Robert Land and Brian Patterson, covering the NFL's Houston Texans. There's a lot more optimism over there on Kirby than there is on Polk covering the Rockets. So if you want a little bit more optimistic Houston takes at the moment, then yes, please check out Locked On Texans, where they've got full coverage of the NFL's hottest team, 8 consecutive wins for your Houston Texans, entering a big matchup Sunday at NRG Stadium, Texans home against top draft pick Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. Anyway, with the plugs out of the way, this is where we will leave off. As always, thanks for listening, and please come back this weekend for our recaps of the San Antonio and Chicago games right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.